so when people eat Hawaiian food, I always say that the most culturally significant dish is going to be the poi. But from any other perspective, it's probably the most unappealing.
Hello, and welcome to Savor, a production of iHeartRadio and Stuff Media. I'm Annie Reese.
And I'm Lauren Vogelbaum, and today we're talking about poi.
Yes.
That clip from the top was from third-generation restaurant owner Monica Taguchi Ryan of Highway Inn on Oahu. And, that quote sort of captures the difficulty that exists in explaining poi to people who are unfamiliar with it.
Yes, and that is something I was totally unfamiliar with, poi, until we started planning our trip and we were workshopping possible topic ideas, and poi was one that came up and something I was like, what is that? And before we left, we picked the brain of our friend Louisa, who is from Oahu's North Shore. And when we asked her about poi, she was kind of vague about it. Pretty much like, you're just going to have to go and try it to understand.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And we were eager to do that. So we sought it out at Helena's, a restaurant well known for traditional Hawaiian dishes. And we spoke about this experience when we got back to our studio here in Atlanta. We went to Helena's.
Right. Yes. Our first poi.
Which this is a very famous Hawaiian restaurant.
Yes.
Very small.
Very small. The waitress was very patient and a little bit, like, very patient, I think.
She guided us, and
she
we
did.
Needed guidance.
We did.
We did. I love when we were like, poi all around, and she's like, nope, one.
I'll give you one poi.
Then we can see, we can go from there.
Yeah.
She just immediately was like, nope.
Nope. No, I appreciated that.
I
was like, you seem just tired enough that
yes.
you're going to be real, real with us.
Yes. And the food was delicious.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my goodness. It was so delicious.
Oh, yeah. We also had poi at the Waiahole Poi Factory, which is a restaurant that offers poi demonstrations. And it was amazing. And we had a poi donut somewhere.
At Liliha Bakery, yes, it's one of the very few donuts that we actually got to eat from our first round of Liliha before we sadly left a bag in a makeshift production studio.
Yes, but Lauren and I rectified that later. Never fear. But okay, that about brings us to our question, poi. What is it?
Well, poi is a preparation of steamed taro root that's pounded out either by hand or by machine with a bit of water until it's this sticky mash or sort of paste or sort of pudding, which is then allowed to ferment either a little or a lot, traditionally with just whatever local microbes are floating around, which, like in yogurt, wind up being mostly lactic acid bacteria, until this product is thick and almost doughy and a little or a lot tart. It's often a grayish purple in color because taro root is often purple, and it's served as a starch, or as the starch, in Hawaiian meals, meant to be taken either together or in between bites with the proteins and vegetables that you're eating. And it reminds me of, the flavor is sort of like a milder sourdough bread, like slightly sweet and slightly creamy, but with this twinge of sourness. And the more sour that poi is, the more that it can balance the sweetness and the richness and saltiness of vegetables and meat. And the texture is really individual in my experience. I guess it's almost sort of like a brownie or a cake batter, or if you've ever had mochi served warm, or like if you have a rice dish with a poached egg and you stir the yolk of the poached egg into the rice, but like smoother than that.
Yeah. I will say for me, it had kind of been built up because of our friend Louisa, and I had no idea what it even looked like. So when it appeared on the table, I thought it was going to be sweet. And don't write in angrily, but I thought it was kind of anticlimactic.
Huh.
I thought it was going to be like something to punch you in the
face.
Like
real weird, like so
yeah.
strange. Because, like we said in that clip, like the waitress was like, I'm not giving you that much poi. You're going to
yeah.
waste that poi.
Exactly. So I thought it was going to be something that was clearly
like
very strong.
Like an acquired taste, like natto or something like that.
Right. And I can see how it is. Or how some people would describe it that way. But to me, it was just kind of like, oh, yeah, Yeah.
Oh, this is good.
Yeah, okay, cool.
Yeah, I like this.
And we didn't, or at least I didn't really know the best way to eat it. So I was mixing it with other things, and I thought it did complement those other things very well. But from what I read doing the research for this episode, it's often meant to just be scooped with your fingers.
Yeah.
And the consistency is, in fact, judged by how many fingers you'll need to scoop it, one, two, or three.
Yeah, how liquidy it is, right? A good three-finger scoop would be the most liquidy preparation of the poi.
Exactly.
Yeah. But let's back up a tiny bit and talk about taro, which we'll have to do a whole episode about at some point because it is fun and fascinating, one of my favorite dessert flavors, and is really big in many dishes all over the world. Mm-hmm. But yeah, in brief, the taro plant is a tropical or sometimes subtropical vegetable that's grown for its greens and for its storage roots, which are these starchy tubers, also called corms.
Yes.
I love that word, corm.
I do, too. Corm.
Oh, gosh. Anyway, the plant grows these storage roots so that it can survive through difficult conditions like drought or storms. And, as you know, side benefit, humans can eat those storage roots, too.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. It's grown and used, again, in dishes all over the world with concentrations in Africa, Asia, and Oceania. The Hawaiian word for taro is kalo. And although pounded and fermented taro products have been developed in other Polynesian cultures and in West and Central Africa, I don't think that any of those ever developed into like a primary staple the way that they did in Hawaii.
Yes. And poi and taro are hugely important in Hawaii historically and modernly. Until the 1920s and the construction of the Alawai Canal, the area that is now Waikiki was covered in taro fields. About 60 to 70% of the taro grown on the neighboring islands of Maui, Kauai, and Hawaii are shipped to Hawaii, and all but 3% of that is turned into poi.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. You can find poi in all kinds of things. Poi crackers, poi muffins, poi cheesecake, poi bread, poi dog biscuits. Here's Kialoa Domingo, who describes himself as a cultural practitioner who cooks.
For us in Hawaii, for Hawaiians in general, the Hawaiian people, I should say, of course, you said you tried the poi. The taro is the number one crop for us. It's our sustenance. It's our staple food.
And, okay, I sort of skipped a step in the making of poi. When you're specifically hand-pounding the taro in the traditional method, with a stone on a wooden board with an absolute minimum of water, and this is to get the taro to the right texture, to smooth it and develop that stickiness by working the starch molecules, the result of that is this undiluted paste called pa'i'ai that is much thicker than a one-finger poi.
Yeah.
And is very, very shelf-stable. Here's Monica again.
And the thing about it is I think, you know, within the Pacific and even Southeast Asia, taro is used throughout Southeast Asia and through the Pacific. What is really, I think, unique to Hawaiian culture is the fact that they pound the taro, so we say ku'i'ai, and then it turns into what we call pa'i'ai. So pa'i'ai is this very, you use only enough water to be able to pound the poi, or pound the taro, I'm sorry. And then you get it into this form called pa'i'ai, and you wrap it in tea leaf to keep it fresh. And once you're ready to actually, you know, eat it and share, Hawaiians is a culture, a very generous culture. You add the poi so you can stretch the kalo, you can stretch the taro and share it with other people. But also, like we spoke about earlier, is that it has a very healthy aspect to the product where the fermentation process occurs.
So poi is pa'i'ai that's been diluted with water. And depending on your preference and, yeah, how much pa'i'ai you have to go around, you might dilute it a little or a lot. And also, as I was saying before, it's sort of the same with how long you let it ferment. It's to taste, but also, I mean, you know, like it's a lot of work to make a batch. So if you make a bunch, then the poi you eat on the first day is not going to be as sour as the poi that you eat on the fifth day. Because what's going on when you make pa'i'ai and poi is, all right, it's time, once again, to talk about fermentation. And yes, bacteria poo.
What?
Because fermentation is controlled spoilage through microorganisms. And when we say that food is spoiled, we mean that microbes have eaten it before we got the chance to. And when you're talking about that, like, sad celery that's kind of liquefying in the bottom of your fridge, that might involve funguses or bacteria that will eat that celery and poop compounds with unpleasant flavors, or maybe that are even pathogenic, meaning that they could make you sick. But in fermentation, humans set up situations where we let helpful bacteria eat some of our food and poop flavored that we like, and also keep pathogenic bacteria from growing, and also often help break down or pre-process, if you want to think about it that way, the food so that our bodies can do more with the food more efficiently. So take taro. If you steam these roots, they're mostly carbohydrates, starches and dietary fiber, along with a little bit of protein and fat and a healthy smattering of minerals and vitamins. The process of pounding it out into pa'i'ai and then poi reduces the dietary fiber but makes all those carbs more easily digestible and ups the vitamin and mineral content of the finished product. It's just really a very smart way of getting the most out of the taro root. And the sound that you just heard there was of poi being pounded with the traditional tools by performers at the Polynesian Cultural Center on Oahu. And the PCC isn't without its weirdnesses. Any time that you're performing aspects of indigenous cultures for mass audiences, you know, it's delicate territory. But we are so grateful that we got to attend the food demonstrations there.
For visitors unfamiliar with poi and pa'i'ai, it might be something that they shy away from. But that's a mistake!
Don't do it, no!
And don't just take our word for it. Take Kyle Rittners, the brand manager and minority partner in Kohana Rum.
The epiphany food is pa'i'ai, which is essentially like the precursor to poi, for lack of a better way. So pounded kalo, taro root, and then you would take it and you could griddle it and make it sort of like caramelized and sweet on the outside and still have this like crazy sustenance, and it's purple and super weird, and every, you know, Haole person is supposed to hate poi and all this, and it's like this, it's perfection. And honestly, it's like that dish, I would have to say, is quintessential. Like, it is, if I could tell somebody to have one thing while they were here, I'd be like, you have to find great poi, like even like sour poi.
Of course, companies found a way to mechanize the traditional process of making poi, and you can go find plastic bags or tubs of poi in grocery stores for around $3 around Hawaii. 40 years ago, poi production on Oahu was double what it is today, and the yearly per capita consumption was about 30 pounds, or 13 kilos. In the 1980s, that number was closer to 5 pounds, or 2.25 kilos.
But there was a time when daily per capita consumption might have been just about that much. And we will get into the history of poi, but first, we've got to take a quick break for a word from our sponsor.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
Okay. The taro plant is one of the world's oldest cultivated crops. As early as 5000 BCE, historians think. It most likely originated somewhere in Southeast Asia, where it spread throughout the rest of the continent to Europe, Africa, and the Pacific Islands. When the Polynesians made the long journey to Hawaii, the taro plant was key in sustaining them, both on their voyage and once they arrived. Because pa'i'ai keeps so well, some researchers think that those first settlers prepared it to eat on the trip, sort of like an ancient granola bar. Either way, taro is one of the island's oldest crops. It's sometimes called a canoe plant because it was bought over on those first canoes.
And there's a Hawaiian myth about taro, that the taro root was the first child of the sky father, Wakea, and goddess as she who gives birth to the stars, Ho'ohokulani. And this child, Haloa, was stillborn, and so they buried him in the earth, and from his grave, kalo, or taro, grew. Their second child was the first Hawaiian man, and he was tasked with caring for his brother, the taro plant. For a long time, only men were permitted to handle kalo. It was considered their sacred duty. And so, yeah, that makes taro, kalo, the original ancestor of Native Hawaiians by this myth. Here's Ke Aloha again.
The Hawaiian people, we truly did worship our food. We view our food as a physical manifestation of our ancestral deities and traditional gods.
Yeah.
You know, the taro plant itself, that's for us. You know, I'll tell you the truth. In my day, I grew up eating poi out of a plastic bag. Okay. And I'm totally fine with that. But as time went on, you know, I learned more about traditional history and culture and beliefs. And with this cultural renaissance, we're teaching our children what we've learned from the history books, that taro is our ancestor. The taro plant is literally related to us.
Right.
Yeah, we're
right.
descended from a taro plant.
Yeah.
So we treat it as our elder brother, as our ancestor, as our kupuna. And when the taro is on the table, whether in the form of a bowl of umeke of poi or whatever else it is, we behave accordingly. You wouldn't speak harshly over it. You wouldn't be scolding the kids. You wouldn't be saying, you know, how terrible of a day you had. That really lends to that whole family, that positive vibe. You know, when you're around food, it's about being grateful for what you have and about sustenance and about, you know. So I always say, we Hawaiians, we love our food. We love our food. So it's not just about sticking into your mouth and enjoying the flavor, you know, which, don't get me wrong, you know, it's definitely something that I love, but just the fact that when you consume this food, it's really partaking of the gods.
Even the Hawaiian word ohana, meaning family, as we all learned in Lilo and Stitch, derives from the word oha, which is the Hawaiian word for the shoots that grow off of the main bulb of a taro root, which are the parts that are harvested while that main root is allowed to keep growing. So ohana literally means something like all from the shoots.
It wasn't appreciated nearly as much by the Europeans who colonized the islands. James Cook called poi, quote, a disagreeable mess from its sourness. Post-contact, the arrival of immigrants from Asia and Europe, bringing with them starches like rice and potatoes, and the decimation of the indigenous population started chipping away at the production and consumption of poi.
It was a slow process. Poi was still eaten at every meal by many Hawaiians in the 1880s. Some estimates suggest 5 pounds a day for a working adult. The first factory that used a machine to grind taro for poi opened in 1898, and the first regulations on poi's manufacture hit the books in 1911. As plantations growing things like sugarcane moved in, that pushed taro out, leading to shortages starting in the 1920s that encouraged a switch to other starches like rice and wheat flour products, which were cheaper anyway. Later, as more waves of immigrants came to the islands, the housing boom would take over even more former taro fields. Acreage devoted to taro steadily decreased.
But poi was still fairly common in the early 20th century. As of 1932, it was estimated that the 13 factories on Oahu were producing a combined total of 20,700 pounds of poi per day, and that's 9,400 kilos. And there was a decent amount of scientific interest in poi.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of this research focused on its potential health benefits. In 1917, Vaughn McCaughey, a botanist with some troublesome views around Japanese, wrote about how easily poi is digested. Walter C. Alvarez wrote in 1938 about poi's uses as a substitute for allergies to things like rice, corn, and wheat. This use was employed for soldiers experiencing food allergies while stationed in Hawaii during World War II. Researchers in the 60s even experimented with giving poi to babies allergic to or intolerant to cow's milk and soy's milk. Despite all this interest around the health benefits of poi, it's consumption did continue to decrease until the 80s.
Mm-hmm. And a resurgence in interest in traditional Hawaiian foods and cultures. And we'll get into that after we get back from one more quick break for a word from our sponsor.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
So yes, like we talked about in our intro episode, welcome to Oahu. Since the 80s, Hawaiian culture has been going through a revitalization thanks to the hard work and determination of Native Hawaiians and other folks in the culinary scene who were interested in uplifting regional cuisines. In the 1980s, only a handful of Native Hawaiian elders knew how to pound poi with a board. Now that number is up to a couple of thousand.
While people living in Hawaii are more likely to report eating rice on a regular basis as compared with poi, there is a renewed interest in and enthusiasm for it. And of course, for some, that interest never went away. There have been a number of taro festivals held around the islands over the years that do celebrate poi. One still running today, the East Maui Taro Festival, started up in 1992 and is going strong. 27th year?
Yeah. Ooh, Maui sounds like it's got a lot of food festivals we need to get to, all I'm saying.
Yeah. Ugh.
In 2009, poi maker Daniel Anthony started a poi business, hand-pounding paiai with traditional tools, a wooden board, and a stone pounder. After a photographer published a photo of him making paiai like this at the farmer's market, the Department of Health issued a cease and desist with the concern that the pores in the wood and stone could harbor harmful microbes. But the locals considered it safe, and his product was delicious enough that Honolulu chef Ed Kinney put the illegal paiai on the menu of his restaurant, Town, which we did eat at.
Mm-hmm.
Here's Kyle again.
Back then, it was, like, illegal. So, like, there's this really rad guy, Daniel Anthony, with, I think it was called Mana'o, something like that. He was pounding it traditionally and, you know, delivering it to certain restaurants that weren't supposed to be serving. And they were like, screw it. Like, this stuff is like traditional. Yeah. It is clean. It's healthy. It's perfect. Like, we're going to satiate the needs of people in the right way. And eventually like legalized paiai was a thing. And like, it actually like, now it's cool. Now it's fine to have.
The community kind of came together on this one, and within 2 years, it was legalized. As long as makers sun bleach their boards, they're good.
Kialoha summed up poi's present and future pretty well.
What's exciting is that in the past 25, 30 years, there's been this resurgence of the traditional culture, language, bringing back old traditions, things that we stopped doing for generations. And, you know, it's exciting. Bringing things back like pounding poi by hand, cooking a pig in the imu or the underground oven. You know, things like that. Not everyone in Hawaii today was privileged to have that growing up. And like I said, I mean, I grew up eating out of a plastic bag. Mm-hmm. And that was, poi in a plastic bag came about from commercialism, you know, came about from our people at one time were being steered to be industrious and do things that we were not traditionally doing, and making poi kind of fell off the wayside. And why are we going to go and spend the day and pound this poi with a board and stone when you could go to the store and buy it out of a plastic bag? And about 10 or 15 years ago, I was asked by a friend, he says, hey, what are you doing this evening? Let's get together. I have a friend, we're going to try this thing out, we're going to pound poi. And I had never done it in my life. And just that simple act of striking the taro and making it into a product that I'm so happy to feed my family. You know, it's there's no words to describe it. It's like, yeah, it's a spiritual affair.
This brings us to the end of this, our episode on poi. But we would love to hear from you listeners. Have you had any poi experiences? Send them our way.
Mm-hmm.
You can email them to us at hello@saverpod.com.
You can also find us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram @SaverPod. We do hope to hear from you. Thank you so much to our super producers, Dylan Fagan and Andrew Howard, and our executive producer, Christopher Hasiotis, and our interviewees. Also, many thanks to Michelle McGowan Rice of the Hawaii Food and Wine Festival, Don Sakamoto Paiva of Put It On My Plate, and Joy Goto and Maria Hartfield of the Hawaii Visitors and Convention Bureau for putting us in touch with all of those interviewees. Savor is a production of iHeartRadio and Stuff Media. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, you can visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Thanks to you for listening, and we hope that lots more good things are coming your way.